You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 224 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Legion of Superheroes number 12, Sensational Wonder Woman number 3, Batman Catwoman number 2, Rorschach number 4, Future State Catwoman number 1, Future State Immortal Wonder Woman number 1, Future State Nightwing number 1, Future State Shazam number 1, Future State Superman Worlds of War number 1, Future State The Next Batman number 2, and Batwoman Season 2 Episode 1, What Happened to Kate Kane? But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC Universe Infinite launched on January 21st with readers' access to over 25,000 titles that include Vertigo, DC Black Label, and Milestones Media. New titles will be added 6 months after in-store release, with digital-first titles arriving in just 3 months. The app will also feature a brand new interface, an enhanced comic reader, custom list, and a customizable app icon, and more.
So now it's Marvel Unlimited, which is what I wanted all this time. I mean, that's literally the 6 months thing is exactly what Unlimited had, or at least to my knowledge still has. It's great. I'm thrilled. I mean, I've been arguing for like a decade that they should have this, and I know they sort of had it with DC Universe, but it never felt like it hadn't quite gotten built up. It felt like it was still working on it. So this is another big step towards what I feel like they should have had for years now.
I'd be curious to see how many subscribers they have so far.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely, I'm not going to pretend like it's going to pull a huge audience, because it's not, but it's just one of those things that I think is something that a comic book fan is going to maybe not pick up permanently. You know what I mean? Not like a continuous subscription, but I mean, I've had Unlimited on and off before. I mean, I was obviously subscribed to DC Universe when it was a multimedia platform, but it's definitely something that I'll subscribe to at some point for like at least a month or two. Just because having that deep of a library is just unbelievably handy. It's so nice.
Yeah, and right now they have a free trial. I'm not sure how long it lasts, but I was thinking about checking it out. All right, up next for DC News, HBO Max's Titans has officially cast Savannah Welch as Barbara Gordon for Season 3. According to the official story, Barbara will be Gotham City Police Commissioner, having left her days as the hero Batgirl behind after she was paralyzed by the Joker. She has a combative relationship with Bruce Wayne, and her life gets a lot more complicated when Dick Grayson returns to Gotham and rekindles their romance. Love is in the air. I'm not even sure when Titans is supposed to return, but it sounds like it's going to be... It sounds more like a Batman show than it does a Titan show.
I mean, are we really surprised by that?
No, not really.
You're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. But this is, I mean, that's just classic DC.
That's true. All right. And other DC news. Superman and Lois is expanding its premiere on Tuesday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. to 90 minutes, followed by a half-hour special, Superman and Lois, Legacy of Hope at 9:30. Superman and Lois, Legacy of Hope will feature sneak peeks and interviews with cast of the new series, as well as special guests discussing the legacy of the Man of Steel.
I'm interested if they just, I mean, you know that they normally film extra scenes and just cut it down to what the show needs. I wonder if they just had so much extra, they're like, why not? Let's just throw it all in. Half an hour seems like quite, I mean, I guess it's not really going to be half an hour. It's probably like an extra, 15 minutes, realistically.
Yeah, because of commercials. But
right.
I think the reason why they're doing, I think there's just two reasons why they're doing it. Number one, they want to try to get, they want to try to draw as big of an audience for Superman and Lois premiere, get people hooked on the show. Number two, I heard The Flash had another COVID shutdown, and that might be why they moved it to a week later.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And for my next bit of DC news, The Flash premiere is being moved 1 week later to Tuesday, March 2nd at 9 p.m. So that's the other thing that I thought was weird is Flash, I thought, was supposed to be on at 8 with Superman and Lois premiering behind it. But now it looks like Superman and Lois are getting 8 p.m. time slot and Flash is going to be on at 9 p.m. Thought that was a weird change.
Yeah, that's interesting because Flash has I think the entire time Flash has been a show has been their biggest draw of all of these superhero shows. So that is an odd choice.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And it's the first time that Flash has moved from an 8 p.m. time slot too. So
that's interesting. I'm curious how that's going to pay off for them. I wonder if that's just going to end up hurting both shows.
I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. I mean, I'm sure Superman's going to have a big draw to his show. So whether it was on at 8 or 9, I still think that would have drawn a big audience. And maybe they're just trying to use Superman to draw more audience to Flash. I don't know.
I'm curious how big of a draw the Superman show is going to be, Drew. The more I think if it had come out when The Flash came out, I think it would be a massive draw. But I wonder if people have sort of, it's not that unique anymore. You know what I mean? It's just sort of a normal thing now for superheroes to also be TV shows. And we've all sort of adjusted to what a CW show is. I'm curious how many people who would have tuned in because it's Superman have now know enough about the CW shows that'll be like, I'm very curious to see what that looks like.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that I'm still interested in the show, but I do think that there are there's a decent number of people who like superheroes who are maybe tired of the CW version of superhero shows.
I can see that. So, I mean, it might have gained even more audience on HBO Max or something, but I guess we'll just have to see how it goes. It all depends
I agree with that completely, Drew. I think you're exactly right. I think if it was an HBO Max show, I think it would be huge. I think it would be a very big draw. I don't know. I haven't sensed any sort of real buzz about the beyond people who are going to watch it anyway, right? I haven't seen a whole lot of buzz outside of the guaranteed audience, so to speak.
I haven't either, so I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Up next for DC News, Black Lightning is premiering Monday, February 8th, 2021. So in just a few weeks. Supergirl has no premiere date yet, and neither does Legends Tomorrow, which we knew they were coming later on in the year. So, but I mean, it looks like for now we're going to have Batwoman, Superman and Lois, Flash and Black Lightning. So, and doesn't seem, we probably won't have a full schedule of shows till, well, Flash isn't even starting until March 2nd. So we'll have a scattered shows where, you know, where they're falling with episodes. It's kind of weird. It's weird for us to have these late starts like this. I wonder how that's going to get affected by March Madness and stuff this year. We don't even know how that's going to play out. And it's just,
I don't think they can. They can. I do not think those shows can compete with March Madness.
Yeah. So,
but maybe they won't have to. I mean, if they're airing at the beginning of the week, they wouldn't have to. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens if they go on hiatus or not. I mean, it'd be weird for Flash to start and then go on hiatus right away.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And we host the Watchathon of Rassilon,
a podcast where we watch every episode of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
It's like an idiot's guide to Doctor Who.
And we're the idiots.
The Watchathon of Rassilon, a Doctor Who podcast made by idiots.
And a proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Legion of Superheroes number 12. The issue opens up on New Krypton. Rogelzar is here to kill John Kent. Mordru attempts to end the Legion. Dr. Fate shows up and banishes Mordru, telling him he can never return. Mon-El shows up, and the House of El fights together to stop Rogelzar. Zod shows up with the Phantom Zone projector, shouts, "Krypton, what say you?" And everyone shouts, "Guilty! Guilty!" And Zod zaps Rogelzar into the Phantom Zone. Brainiac 5 confirms this was not the great darkness that was foretold. Later on, Gold Lantern and Brainiac talk. Brainiac tells Gold Lantern that he does not possess a Green Lantern ring. Those that gave it to you are not the Elders of Oa. And I'm really interested in learning more about this mystery. Probably really the only interesting thing in this issue. The issue ends with a full page of the Legion partying. And it says, to be continued in future state, Legion of Superheroes.
I want to give this comic the benefit of the doubt and say that this was by far the most affected by future state. Because if not, if this is how Bendis intended to end it, oh, bro. It's way too soon. I mean, like, Mordru meant nothing to me, Drew. We just saw him for the first time last issue. And he was supposed to be this big threat, and then he's just I just don't care that he got. It's not that his defeat was bad. I liked the scene, but it meant nothing to me because I didn't even know the guy. He wasn't even really a villain yet.
No, he's just some dude that showed up, and then this guy's bad, and then they get rid of him.
It was just not a good... I know it's 12, and that makes it seem like it was designed to be a 12-issue arc, but it just... I really didn't feel that way. And if it was intended to be this way, then that's terrible. That is just terrible plotting.
I don't think so. I mean, they had to continue the story into the future state. It said to be continued in future state. I'm like,
but with a new story arc. You know what I mean? Like, yes, it's continuing, but it's not continuing this story. This story arc of Mordru building up as this threat and the Legion, like that was not enough. That is not a good story arc.
You know, the story had to get cut short. I mean, they were even talking about the Great Darkness. And then they made a point of telling us the Great Darkness didn't happen, even though they were kind of foreshadowing it earlier. Whatever they were planning on doing, they just had to cut short. And this is what we got.
Right. And again, I'm hoping that that's the case. So We'll see how this story continues to develop. I agree with you. I'm super, super intrigued by the Gold Lantern. Very curious about that, but I just, the reason, Drew, I'm not convinced that this wasn't how the story was meant to be plotted is because it's been, in my opinion, very poorly plotted the whole time. And so I don't have a lot of faith that that pattern's going to change.
Well, we're going to get a new creative team on it because Bendis is done. So hopefully it gets better. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Sensational Wonder Woman number 3. The issue opens up with Wonder Woman telling her mother that Artemis of Bana Hidal is trapped on a place called War World. And Wonder Woman receives a distress call and is on her way to help her sister. When Wonder Woman arrives on War World, Mongrel seems thrilled that a new challenger has entered his arena. Wonder Woman states that she is not staying, and Mongrel informs her that you only leave War World one of two ways, victorious or in a casket. Artemis has a confession to make to Wonder Woman. She didn't need rescuing, she needed a worthy opponent. Wonder Woman and Artemis battle until finally Wonder Woman disarms Artemis and proves she is defeated. To be continued. And my guess is Mongrel is not happy that Wonder Woman hasn't killed Artemis and kind of spared her. And my guess is they're going to end up fighting next issue.
I like this. I've really enjoyed this, all three issues of this so far. I like the artwork. I like the storytelling. It's been good stuff.
Yeah, I liked it too. So I'm glad we've been reviewing it.
It's this, Drew. I mean, this has been a really good Wonder Woman comic to the point where I'm almost disappointed that this is gonna get passed. I feel like it's gonna get passed over by people that would enjoy it just because it doesn't occur to them to check it out.
Yeah, I could see that too. Because it's not the regular Wonder Woman title. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman Catwoman number 2. The issue opens up with old Joker and old Selina. Joker asks Selina how she is going to kill him, and she answers with my fingernails. I'm going to open your neck and watch you empty. Scott Huff, one of Joker's henchmen, is killed by the Phantasm, and Batman and Catwoman investigate. Next, Catwoman pays a visit to the Joker, and she is not too happy that he is being sloppy. Selina tells Joker that Batman is looking into Jimmy the Lion. She throws a piece of cat jewelry at him because Batman can't find it on her and better find it on him. Now we see the Phantasm kills another Joker henchman, Warren Poland, at Porky's Bar. I like how Porky's Bar keeps showing up in King Steph. Yep. Batman, Catwoman open a safe, and Batman is searching for a diamond necklace that Jimmy the Lion recently bought. We see that the Phantasm kills another of Joker's henchmen on the subway, Brian Patchett. The Joker calls Batman with the bat signal and surrenders because he's afraid of the Phantasm. The issue ends with Selina killing the Joker just like she said she would at the beginning of the issue. Man, that was almost a tongue twister. One thing I got to say about this issue is it sure seemed to jump around from the past to the present to the future. It's not hard to follow, or I should say it's not difficult to follow, but it's not always easy keeping track of what's going on.
Yes, I would agree with you. It's interesting, Drew, because it almost feels a little paradoxical in that I much like with a lot of King stories, I feel like this is going to read best as a complete story, but unlike some of the other ones, it feels like it is actually written to be read issue by issue, which is interesting. You know what I'm saying? Like some of his other ones, I've felt like the Strange Adventures, which we're not actually done with. That one doesn't necessarily feel like it was meant to be read issue by issue. It almost feels like you are reading just the next chapter of one story. the way these comics have been constructed in these first two issues have felt like you're meant to kind of marinate on the story after the issue's over. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel to me like King wants you to turn the page to chapter two right away. He wants you to be sitting there for a month going like, whoa, what now? But again, that being said, I think the story's going to make a lot more sense once we've read the story once. I think it's just one of those ones, a lot like some Christopher Nolan movies where like the movie works and is good, but then when you go back and watch it again, you're like, oh, and you can see a lot more about what he's doing. And I feel like this is one of those stories where, obviously we'll see whether this story sticks the landing or not. But I feel like it's one of those ones, once we know the end of the story, I think going back and rereading this is going to bring a lot more out, and we're going to get more out of some of these earlier issues than we do the first time around.
Well, I can tell you, brother, I'm marinating. And it's funny you bring up Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, because I just watched it recently, and I hadn't watched it for a while. I was surprised when I watched it this time. I don't know. I saw it from a new perspective or something. It made more sense to me this time watching it. I was like, man, this is kind of bookended. I didn't really notice it before when I watched it, but this maybe because I watched them back to back to back pretty much. And I can see what you're saying about this Batman Catwoman comic, because I think it's going to take, like you said, it's going to take to read all of them to understand the whole story, especially with us jumping all over the place so much.
I think it's one of those, and we've read a few stories like this. I like, for me personally, White Knight, I talk about how much I like that story to begin with, but I liked White Knight even more rereading the story. And so we've read some comics that are like this. I'm so curious to see where this story goes. I'm personally enjoying it right now, but I agree with you because it is jumping back and forth a lot. And I wonder if it feels like it won't stay that way, because I don't know how much more story in the present there is to tell. It almost feels like that was it, right? I almost wonder if we might jump back and forth to a different time period.
That's a possibility. I don't know. But I'm very curious to see what's going to happen in the story or where it's going.
I'm so curious I love the way that they constructed it, where Batman, because he's not an idiot, right? We get towards the end of the story and Batman directly asks her. He's like, hey, I don't want to do this again. Were you involved? And the comic kind of pauses. I love the way that like the art and everything, it really forces you to like almost pause as a reader, and she says no, and it just pauses you on that lie. I thought that was a really well constructed moment, not just from King, but like from the artist and the way they put that page together. To me, at least reading it, I stuck on that panel, which is, I think, what they wanted you to do.
Yeah, because you know he knows the truth.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like that's her moment, right? That's her moment to not lie, and she does it. She lies, and you're like, oh no, man, yeah. that was a good, I mean, not like a, I didn't feel good, but it was a good moment.
Yeah, I think we're going to see the payoff for that sometime in the future. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Rorschach number 4. When the issue opens up, we find that our detective is interviewing an inmate or psych patient who is coloring a Pontius Pirate coloring book. Now, we learn from the patient that he met Laura Cummings, who he only knew her as the kid, at a carnival and they both worked at. Now, she was an ace shot with a pistol, which we saw last issue, and he was a strong man. And both of them loved the Pontius Pirate comic and soon became close friends. Now, at a cast party, a mover guy got really drunk and told everyone how he beat his wife to death. And Laura comes up to Strongman and tells him that she's going to shoot the mover guy because he was rotten and it's her duty. Now, the Strongman ended up following the mover guy, and we see him push him over a railing, killing the mover guy. We see Laura is mad at Strongman for a few weeks and then comes up and talks to him. And she is mad at him for not telling her that he is Rorschach. After that, Laura gives him targets of rotten people, squid people, and then the Strongman goes out as Rorschach and takes care of them. And this went on until the Strongman was eventually captured by the FBI. The Strongman doesn't believe that Laura is dead when the detective tells him, and Strongman believes that Laura will return and find the real Rorschach. This is a very interesting issue. And it was very interesting to see Laura Cummings through the Strongman's, or through his point of view. And I thought this was really interesting. I wasn't expecting this issue to be more about Laura Cummings, but I'm glad we learned more about her.
Well, yeah, and I think as of now, she seems like she's, in a sense, the main character of the story. At least that's what it feels like to me so far. Obviously we've got, it's all coming from the perspective of the detective, but it still feels like he's sort of the vessel for her story. And it's his investigation that's sort of telling the story that she's got. So I don't know. I am just enjoying the heck out of this comic, man. It is so good.
I am too. And I gotta say, even though other people are putting on the Rorschach mask and doing things for her, she's actually the Rorschach in this.
Exactly. Yeah. So no, you're exactly right.
Yeah. Very interesting comic, and I'm curious to see where this is heading, because we know how it ends already. So it's interesting learning the in-betweens. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Future State Catwoman number 1. The issue opens up in Alley Town, Gotham. People are being loaded on a train by the magistrate. Adults are being loaded in the first three coaches, and the children are being loaded in the back. All belongings are left in bins provided, and you board with nothing other than the clothes on your back. The captain tells Ms. Canoris, who is a liaison for the Gotham City Council, that these young boys and girls will be shown the path to becoming productive, law-abiding citizens at Whiteport Reformatory, and they will work toward the common goal of progress and prosperity in Gotham. Now, Catwoman plans on stealing the train. She has some kids working for her on the inside, and once Catwoman is on the train, her plan is to start making her way up to the front, sending occupants back each car compartment. Catwoman comes across some dude named Onomatopoeia, who only speaks and sounds. Catwoman makes a deal with him that if she frees him, he'll help her take out the guards all the way up to the front of the train. Now, at the end of the issue, we see that Ms. Canaris kills the guard who's supposed to be protecting her, and she reveals herself to be Talia al Ghul and asks a prisoner, "Can you hear me, Bruce?" I really found this issue interesting, especially when we got to the end and Bruce was on the train.
One thing, and that's Drew, this one thing I found kind of interesting is the sort of nebulous timeline that these, like, they're all of the Batman books are doing the same magistrate world, but it doesn't all feel like they're doing it at the same time, which is interesting, and yeah. I don't necessarily dislike that.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And when I was reading, when I got to the end of this, I'm like, where's this fall in the timeline? I was thinking about it. From this indication, we've been told that Bruce Wayne was dead, Batman was dead, and some of the other ones. But this one shows he's still alive, obviously. And of course, we saw that in, I forget which Batman one, another one of the Batman ones. But this is like before that one. But it's interesting how it's all tying together.
I think it's the smart decision, in my opinion, because it, instead of forcing us to read these comics in a certain order as they're coming out, it's sort of just like you can kind of pick up any of them, and they're all, like I said, we're telling a connected story, but it doesn't feel like it's forcing your hand to have read a comic beforehand.
No, and it feels like you don't even have to pick up the other ones They all seem like they're self-contained stories. So if you don't want to pick up one, you don't have to, but they're all kind of interconnected somewhat. So very interesting. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State, Immortal Wonder Woman number 1. The issue opens up impossibly long ago in the distant future. Wonder Woman returns to an abandoned Batcave to retrieve Bruce's utility belt. Not because she needed it for any reason, but so she could have Bruce near her. We see that she is already wearing a Green Lantern ring around the necklace on her neck. We find out that the Earth is dying. On Themyscira, we learn that the Amazons inherited Earth after the fall of man. The warriors are preparing for a battle as a last stand to protect the Earth and Swamp Thing because the green is dying. Now, on Apocalypse, we learn that New Genesis is gone and the Undoing is coming to Apocalypse. Big Barda and Orion are trying to convince Darkseid to fight with them. Instead, Darkseid leaves and heads to Earth. When Darkseid gets to Earth, a very old Superman is ready to fight against him. Superman loses to Darkseid, but Wonder Woman shows up before Superman is slain. Wonder Woman fights Darkseid, but loses to him also. And then we see the Amazons show up to fight, but Darkseid just zaps him with his Omega Beams. And the issue ends with Swamp Thing giving Diana some sort of gift, and Darkseid is lifting Superman up by the throat, choking him.
I was a little more lukewarm on this. I liked the idea of some of it. I really liked the beginning when she was talking to the ghost of Bruce Wayne. I was almost disappointed that the story wasn't more of that, where it's almost like Wonder Woman returning to an empty Earth. That would have been kind of interesting. And that's just a personal taste. The rest of the comic got a little too much for me. Like, it started throwing in too much at once, or it was like the reason I liked the beginning part was because it was so simple. Like, it was so easy to follow what was going on, and it was telling this interesting story. And then it was like, but also there's essentially a crisis happening, but also Superman's, you know, a million years old, but also Darkseid's leaving his planet to die, but also he's now attacking Earth because he can. It was just, I don't know. To me, it threw too much at the wall at the end.
Yeah, there was a lot at the end. But I got to tell you, the beginning really drew me into this issue. And
I totally agree with you there.
So I was sucked in from the beginning. And I like this issue. We got a backup story in this with Nubia. Her story opens up in Atlanta at the Michael C. Carlos Museum. Grail, the daughter of Darkseid, is stealing an artifact, and she is about to cut off a guard's head when Nubia shows up. And the two fight, and eventually Grail drops the artifact. We see that Nubia grabs it, and her mind suddenly flooded with images. And Nubia passes out from the encounter with the artifact. Grail tries to kill Nubia, but there's some sort of protective aura surrounding her, so Grail just grabs the artifact and flees. Later on, we see that Nubia pays a visit to her aunt Nancy, and Nubia learns that long ago her aunt was part of a group that cast an incantation with the intention of freeing Kin from the prison of their anger and rage. The spell manifested as a master key meant to open the minds of gods, but instead could be used to open all sorts of things like mystic doors, magic vessels, hidden portals, and interdimensional gateways between existences. And we found out it was even capable of ripping a hole in the time into time and space. Now, Aunt Nancy's group discovered that there were ancient evil slumbering in spaces between realms, and because they couldn't break the spell or cast a counter to it, the group shattered the master key and placed it in different vessels, and then scattered it across the globe. And we find out that Gale had already found 8 of the 9 artifacts, and Nubia's mission is going to be to stop Grail. But we see that at the end of the issue that this portal opens up in Aunt Nancy's office and sucks Nubia right into it. I also really liked this story, too. I thought it was really interesting. And I'm curious to see where that story goes.
It didn't do it as much for me. I not that I'm not interested. I'm very interested in the Nubia character. And I'm curious to see where the story goes. I had a hard time following this one. I guess that's not the right word. I had a hard time retaining my interest in this one. It was kind of just losing me. I don't really have a good reason for it. I don't know. I just sort of was fading in and out of the story, if I'm being honest.
I gotta tell you, because I read it through, and then I went back and did my notes on it. That's what, when I did my notes on it, it drew me more into the story because I was going over the details. So I guess that's why I was more drawn into the story.
No, and that makes sense, because there was so much just like characters sitting down and talking, and I didn't know who any of them were, and they weren't really making an effort to explain that. Like, I really did not like the interaction between Nubia and Grail. I just thought it felt weird to me. It just didn't feel particularly well written. And I think I just kind of like it. The comic kind of lost me after that. Like, I kept sort of reading, but I was like, and then it ended. I was like, oh, okay.
I don't know. I got to tell you, I liked a lot more of the future states this week than I have some of the other ones. I mean, we've both seen good and bad future state titles so far. So
it's definitely not been necessarily consistent. There's been some up and downs for sure.
Yeah.
Which is to be expected.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State Nightwing number 1, Gotham City, several years from now. Two cybers are attacking a man and a woman. Nightwing intercedes and stops the cybers. When the man wants to shake Nightwing's hand for saving them, Nightwing says no and throws one of his Eskrima sticks at him. Both the man and the woman are augmented humans working for the magistrate. And we see that Nightwing is able to take both of them out. Now, Nightwing also stops a sniper on another rooftop who attempted to take him out during this conflict. And we see Nightwing returns to his HQ, which is inside the ruins of Arkham Asylum. Interesting place to have a headquarters. We see that Nightwing has a quick meeting with his team on Zoom. And apparently there's still social distancing in the future, so that's not too encouraging. Batgirl brings up the fact that there's another Batman out there. Nightwing reminds Babs that it's not a Batman out there. There will only ever be one. Well, in the shower, the next Batman shows up, and Dick and the next Batman get into a scuffle until Dick zaps him with electricity, incapacitating him. The next Batman tells Nightwing the story of Sarah Dal and how he saved her from human trafficking, only for the magistrate to seize her and interrogate her about the next Batman. The next Batman believes she is now dead by the hands of the magistrate. Suddenly, Arkham is surrounded by the magistrate, and during the earlier incident, Nightwing was bugged. And we found out that Nightwing already knew that, and he was making his last stand against the magistrate on his own turf. I found this issue both intriguing and kind of mediocre at the same time. I mean, I'm curious about what's going on, but I thought the story could have been better too.
Well said. I don't really have anything to add. That is, you've summarized my thoughts on it completely. Kind of interesting, not that great.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State Shazam number 1. I found this issue hard to follow, but this is what I got out of it, Cletus. For a reason I'm not really sure of, Billy Shazam went to Neuron and made a deal with him. Neuron split him into two beings. Billy and Shazam became separate beings. Billy is supposed to guard some door, and I wasn't sure if he was holding back the seven deadly sins or something else, but Billy had to stay behind in hell guarding that door. Shazam returns to Earth to be the hero, but something has gone wrong, or Shazam has become possessed, because I'm not sure why Shazam is killing bad guys, and the Justice League of Detroit wants some answers. There, that's my summary of that.
Drew, I mean, what the hell? Why would you pick Shazam to be the grim anti-hero? Are you freaking kidding me? That character already exists. It's Black Adam. I just don't. What a stupid decision. Who's sitting? Like, if you want anti-hero Shazam, write a Black Adam story. That character is literally there in your stable to use. I was so frustrated reading this.
Yeah, I did not like it at all either. And you probably knew what I was gonna tell you.
It's just inexplicable to me. I just don't know. Shazam, of all characters, I don't think should be an anti-hero. But also, it's the dumbest choice to be an anti-hero because you already have that. It would, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's...
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
It would be like if Barry Allen built himself like a negative speed force and started doing some antagonistic things. You'd be like, this seems familiar. I feel like there was a character that could have maybe done this.
What a terrible issue.
This was so bad. I was unbelievably disappointed in this.
All right, let's move on. Future State Superman Worlds of War number 1. The issue opens up with a girl named Sadie. The bus drops her off in Smallville, and we see her walk through town and out to a Superman memorial where a group of people have gathered that were saved by Superman. The group has come on the night of the Perseid meteor shower to remember Superman, pay him tribute, and to hear each other's stories in hopes of knowing him better. Now, Sadie hears some stories about being saved, and then the conversation turns to what happened to Superman, and quite a few people think he's dead. And Sadie is wondering where everyone's hope is. She states that it wasn't his powers that made him Superman, and that she was saved by Clark Kent. Now we find out that Superman is on War World. He's old and he's depowered and he must fight for his life. And he promises the dude he was caged with that they're going to go home. I gotta tell you, Cletus, we had talked about briefly about this not wanting a barbarian story with Superman, or, you know, him fighting in the barbarian ring on War World. But I kind of liked how this issue opened. It was interesting to get people's point of view of Superman. And it was interesting to see Smallville as a tourist town. Because if this was real and people knew Superman's identity and he's from Smallville and stuff, that's exactly what would happen to Smallville. It's turned into a tourist trap. And that's exactly what they showed us.
I mean, not just that. It was almost like a mecca. It was almost like a religious tourist trap.
Yeah,
that was the really interesting thing. No, Drew, I'm totally on board with you. Based on the promotional art for this, I was like, oh god, this was pretty good. I agree with you. I enjoyed this, and I especially loved the Supermanless part of the story, which that normally would be a good thing if the best part of the story has nothing to do with him, nothing to do with his presence. But I'm with you. I enjoyed this.
I'm very interested to find out how Sadie was saved by Clark Kent. I'm sure that's going to be part of the story we're going to see next time. I have a feeling we're going to see more of her and more of what's happening with Superman and War World, obviously. So I'm glad it's just not Superman being thrown into fights and, you know, that could just be boring. So
I agree.
Now, what also I found interesting was the backup stories in this, too, was also part of the story that was going on, even though it focused on different stuff. Mr. Miracle story. First thing we're told that the story takes place after the events of Future State Superman Metropolis number 2, which when I saw that Mr. Miracle was in this, I was like, wait a minute, he was just in the other book. But obviously this happens after that. We see Mr. Miracle comes through some sort of portal and lands on a bunch of alien remains. He determines it's some sort of repurposing and recycling facility, When Mr. Miracle makes his way out of the facility, he realizes he's on Warworld. Mr. Miracle runs into the Midnighter, who tells him to contact the authority or the JLA and let them know Clark needs their help. Someone detects source energy and sends their robots after Mr. Miracle to confiscate his technology. And when Mr. Miracle escapes into space, he discovers a large number of warships. I think one of the most interesting things we find out about this story is what they're doing with all the alien remains that die. They're basically getting the protein from them and feeding them to the slaves. Kind of gross. All right, we also had a story about the Midnighter. Warworld sometime tomorrow. Midnighter receives a package from his best friend, and he finds out that someone is developing an isotope similar to kryptonite to eradicate all life. And Midnighter must deliver the payload to the collider if he is to save all life in the galaxy. We see a voice talks to him the whole time that guides him to his destination. And then the guy at the end, it felt like we were supposed to know who that was, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, it's Apollo.
Is it Apollo? Okay. Yeah. And I believe, if I remember right, Midnighter's husband was Apollo. I guess his suit, his costume was a little different than I remembered, so.
Yeah, I agree. It's not quite the same. I don't know. I know so little about these characters. So I wasn't really going in with any knowledge of that. I mean, beyond that, I knew Midnighter existed and was sort of a Batman-ish character.
Yeah.
Obviously more violent.
But more violent. Yeah, because he killed.
This one didn't do it for me. I think the artwork is probably suited to the kind of character that Midnighter is. I just don't know enough about the character, and it didn't hook me early, and then I was gone. And so that was so I don't really know. The comic might have gotten better at a certain point, but I just, like, when I wasn't intrigued initially, I just was like, ah, I kind of just skimmed through it.
I was okay with it because it kind of tied into the other one. So, and then we got another story in this. Black Racer. 2 years ago, the Black Racer dies in a racing accident, and it seems her opponent sabotaged her vehicle. Now, Black Racer is dead on the Ring 5 of Warworld. She's revived and breaks free, and she decides to free the slaves and bring them with her. And the group gets stopped by a bunch of guards. So, just another character there on Warworld. I'm kind of wondering if they're all going to come together at some point in the story. That's what I got the feeling of.
I would agree. I'd agree with that. And the Black Racer one, really, I almost wish they just hadn't done that story and had waited until issue 2 to give her a bigger story, because it was such a waste. To me, it just kind of was a waste of time, because nothing really all that worthwhile happens.
No, it's basically just backstory, pretty much.
And barely enough back. Like, it, sure, it accomplishes, like, technically establishing who the character is, but I don't know about you. I don't really have a feel for her character.
I don't either.
I don't really have an opinion on the story, because it just felt like we got the first 2 or 3 pages of the story, and it was like, oh, time's up.
Yeah, it was very short.
Ran out of time. Come back next time.
Yeah. I made the comic really long, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All these backup stories. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for the week. Future State, The Next Batman number 2. The issue opens up with the next Batman finding a dead body. Batman spots a camera nearby and quickly checks the footages for clues. The magistrate shows up and the next Batman is on the run. He gets shot, but he makes it to his motorcycle. And the magistrate tracks his phone when he contacts a partner. We see the next Batman ditches the phone and finds a place to hide. Meanwhile, we see Mrs. Fox is talking with the mayor. She's talking to him about rewording the laws they have in place and states that the way the laws are currently written is not going to stand up to a challenge in court. While hiding out, we find out that the next Batman is not Luke Fox. It's Tim Fox, or as he goes by now, Jace, the black sheep of the Fox family. This was not clear last issue, but it sure was this issue. And I do not know who this Vic he's working with. And I'm going to pause my summary right here because did you figure out that wasn't Luke 2 when you were reading this issue?
Nope. Did not. I will admit the first time that I realized that was when you just said it, Drew.
Yeah.
And I clearly wasn't reading closely enough.
And I did not catch it the first time I read this issue either. When I was going back and doing my notes for this issue, that's when I caught it. I'm like, wait a minute. That's not Luke Fox. I looked at the artwork, and then I went back to the previous issue, looked at the next Batman with his mask off. I'm like, no, that's Tim Fox, or Jace, as he's going by now. It wasn't Luke. I was totally surprised, and I was kind of taken aback. I was like, whoa, we were totally wrong, and the comic doesn't really point it out. I just noticed it from... I kind of noticed it from the artwork, and there was at a point where he called him Jace, and I was wondering, wait a minute, why did he call him Jace for and not Luke? And I had to go back to the first issue and to figure everything out, and make sure everything made sense. So yeah, that was very surprising to find out.
You're telling me.
Thanks to Vic, the next Batman is able to track down the two killers. And when the next Batman takes them down, he discovers the two killers are parents. The man they murdered was an online child predator who convinced their daughter to meet up with him, and then they never saw her again. And before the next Batman can do anything about the parents, the magistrate shows up. Kind of changes your whole perspective on the issue now that you know that Luke is not the next Batman. Yep, that's why I caught that, is because he called him Jace, and I was like, what?
Yeah, I totally missed that.
So
I'm usually the one that catches stuff, Drew. Come on.
Yeah.
Stop stealing my thunder.
So, yes, I caught that, and I had to go back and look, and sure enough, it was Tim Fox's face when he had the helmet off. We just assumed it was Luke Fox. I wonder how many other people have made that mistake.
Well, I mean... That's okay. That, to be fair, though, that's one downside of comics, is when a character unmasks, it, like, you know what I mean. The Bruce Wayne doesn't have a consistent face.
No,
it's entirely dependent on how the artist chooses to draw him, or Luke Fox, or apparently his brother. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's not. I think that's an easy one to get wrong. It's not like, that's the one thing that, like, it's easier to do in films because, like, the actor is obviously the actor.
Right.
But with comics, you're really beholden on the comic telling you this character is this person.
Right. Because it's so true. And we've talked about this in the past, not being able to tell, you know, one Bruce Wayne can look a whole different than another Bruce Wayne just because of the art. So...
Well, and then there was that one Batgirl story that we read that it was supposed to be, I think, relatively clear that it was a Barbara lookalike at the end. But if you're not paying close enough attention, it just looks like Barbara because, again, you're relying on the artist drawing somebody that looks close to the how they draw Barbara, but not quite. And you're, like, again, it's already just, you know, artistic interpretation to begin with. So, it's just tough. That's a tough thing to do.
Yep. We also had a backup story in this. Several years from now, Cassandra Cain is captured and brought to the magistrate detention facility. And Cassandra is on a mission to find Barbara Gordon, who is rumored to be held prisoner in a secret facility underneath solitary confinement. Now, Cassandra runs into Stephanie Brown, who betrayed the resistance. And when both get thrown into solitary confinement for fighting, Stephanie reveals she is deep undercover on a mission for the resistance, which... I kind of figured that when I was reading this. The story ends up with Stephanie starting a riot to help Cassandra finish her mission. I found this backup story intriguing, and I knew Stephanie was in there under deep cover. I mean, it was totally obvious.
Well, this is one instance where if you've read one of the other feature states, that's kind of spoiled for you because... We don't know whether this one takes place before or after the mission with Tim.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We know that she's at some point she's out there acting on behalf of the heroes after the magistrate's already taken over. So it was one of those things where it was like you said, it was like, oh, I mean, obviously she's not on the wrong side. We've seen her explicitly be on the right side in an earlier comic, whether it takes place early or not, I'm not sure, but
yeah, that's it's hard to tell where it takes place. We also had another backup story in this, the Gotham City Sirens, which honestly I wasn't really interested in. But Catwoman and Poison Ivy have made a deal with Dilton Luxury Droid. She'll give herself up as hard evidence against Dilton if Catwoman and Poison Ivy take her out for a ladies' night out. And the ladies end up at a speakeasy that is owned by Slam Bradley. And the magistrate shows up and shoots both Slam and Selena.
This was definitely in competition for the future state story I've cared the least about. I just did not care, Drew. There was just, I just did not care.
And I have nothing else to say about it. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk the Batwoman season premiere.
Crisis for the geek kind. Top geek officials admit they underestimated the hipster's defense capability. Join the geek revolution and save the galaxy. Geeks from all over the globe are joining up to fight for the future. They're doing their part. Are you? Want to know more? Join Weeby Geeks and the Geek Revolution and save the world. Service guarantees citizenship. Listen to Weeby Geeks podcast on iTunes and Stitcher or online at weebygeeks.net. Weeby Geeks, your voice for the Geek Revolution. Want to know more?
All right, let's talk Batwoman Season 2, Episode 1, What Happened to Kate Kane? Cletus, the writers didn't waste any time in letting us know what happened to Kate Kane. The episode begins with a plane crash near where Ryan Wilder is living in her van. Ryan rushes out to the crash scene trying to find survivors, and we see her give one man CPR, and then right after that, she sees the Batwoman suit. Ryan Wilder feels like she's won the lottery. With the Bat suit, Ryan can finally find justice for her mother. We quickly learn through flashback and Mary searches that Ryan Wilder's mom died in childbirth and her dad wasn't around. She was raised in the system where she got into trouble until she was adopted and turned her life around. Ryan and her adopted mom moved to a nicer apartment, but squatters attacked them and her mom dies. Later, she was framed and convicted of drug possession with intent and was incarcerated for 18 months. And Ryan can't find work because of her criminal record, and she can't pay her court fees because she doesn't have a job, and now we see she's living in her van. Ryan suits up and seeks out leads on the people responsible for her mother's murder, which just so happens to be the Wonderland Gang and Alice.
Of course.
Of course.
God. If there's any hope that we had of Alice not being a main character, it's just right down the drain. So at least that was kind of the writers to just peel the Band-Aid right away and be like, no, you're stuck with her. Nice try, though.
Now, when she meets Luke and Mary, we see that Ryan has no intention of giving them back the suit until she finds justice for her mother. Alice is not happy to learn that her sister is dead because she had a whole big plan to get revenge on her father and Kate. Her plan was to have Tommy Elliot, disguised as Bruce Wayne, steal the kryptonite bullet. Alice was going to give it to her father so she could use it to kill Batwoman, and once she was shot, Alice was going to unmask her to reveal Kate. Tommy Elliot fully embraces being Bruce Wayne. We see him start living his life and wanting to be Batman. And when the suit's GPS comes on, the Batcomputer, Tommy steals the Batmobile and goes after Ryan. Tommy shoots Ryan, but that doesn't stop her from giving him an ass whooping. Tommy is captured, and Ryan returns the suit to Luke and Mary because she doesn't feel worthy to fill Kate Kane's shoes. Now, I got to tell you, Cletus, when the comic news gave us Ryan Wilder's background this summer, I wasn't too thrilled about the character, but I kept an open mind. After seeing this first issue, Ryan seems to be Ryan seems to be the complete opposite of Kate. She's kind of full of life, she's funny, and she's willing to give up the suit because she knows it's the right thing to do. However, just like Kate, she has the heart of a hero. But that's not the description I got reading it over the summer. So I was kind of happier we got the version we did of Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I had no complaints about the character at all.
So I was happy about that. I was expecting a character I wouldn't like, but I ended up did liking her. So, and actually, I have this feeling she's going to be a better Batwoman than Kate Kane was, honestly.
I agree. Well, I also, and this is just personal taste, but I've said this about other shows, I really personally don't find alcohol abuse to be a charming character trait that a lot of modern TV seems to think that it is. And so I I know it's not Marvel, but my biggest problem with Jessica Jones was that half the show was her just pounding a whole bottle of whiskey. And I'd be like, I know, I get it. She drinks. Can we do literally anything else with her character? And I sometimes felt that way with Batwoman. Not nearly as much, but again, there were times where it was like, God, I get it. I understand. She's, look how super cool she is because she can drink the whole bottle. Wow. Again, subjective personal taste, but I just don't care for that. So pretty thrilled that that's not a core character trait for Ryan. Not surprised, but disappointed at how quickly and lame they ended the Bruce Wayne story. I mean, that we really couldn't have made that a 2-episode at least thing.
I have to agree with you. I was like, did they stop? Did they end it just because we didn't have Kate Kane anymore? Or were they always planning on doing this? Because it ended up not being that great. They could have strung this out for quite a while. And they just dropped the ball with it.
Oh, totally. It was just a waste. What a huge waste. Which, pretty consistent with CW twists. But, alas. I got to say, Drew, I did not understand until after the fact that he had shot her with a kryptonite bullet. That was not clear to me in the moment.
That was clear to me that she was that he shot her with a kryptonite bullet, and her hiding it, that just made sense for her character. I thought.
I didn't catch it. Like, I know I saw the thing where they showed rupture. I thought it meant like there was some sort of internal damage for, like, you know what I mean? Like, yes, the bullet didn't pierce the suit, but the impact of the shock would have been enough to do some sort of internal damage. That's how I interpreted that. And again, wrong. But it didn't occur to me until afterwards. They're like, wait, you got shot by the kryptonite bullet? I was like, wow, I really feel like you should have. To me, they could have made that more clear. And then also, they built that. It's so stupid. I cannot get over how dumb this, the kryptonite bullet is the only way to hurt Batman / Batwoman. Ugh. But then to build up that stupid plot point and then to have it just be a shoulder wound, I mean, that is just peak CW.
Yeah, I got to agree with you on that. But they are going to play out, it looks like they are going to play out the after effect of the kryptonite. It's like poisoning her body or something.
Yeah, whatever. They're not casting a third Batwoman. I can't pretend to feel stakes with this stuff, Drew. Like, they just cast her as Batwoman. Nothing's going to happen to her character. I've lost my patience to a certain extent with some of these CW twists because they never have any stakes to them.
Yeah, that's true.
You and I both know that Ryan is fine. She's fine. I would love to be proven wrong, not because I dislike the character, but just because that would actually be them following through on something for once. But they're not going to. And I understand why. It's a TV show. She's the lead actress. I get it. So then why are we doing the song and dance? No one, there's not a single person that watched that show that ended with, uh-oh, is she going to be okay? No one thought that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. She needs to have something besides death affecting her character.
I agree. I like the character. Like you said, I like the character. I'm interested to see what they do. I thought it was a pretty... Again, they didn't directly kill Kate. They heavily implied that she's dead, but the window's open there. Like, they definitely left the door open if the actress ever changes her mind for, you know, some sort of guest appearance. But pretty strongly right away, like, she's gone. New character in. That was all fine with me. It was just there was no way the kryptonite bullet thing wasn't going to end stupidly. And they just really... They impressed me. Like, I underestimated how dumb the payoff for that bullet was going to be.
One of the things I was really excited about seeing in this episode was the Batmobile. And I hope...
That couldn't keep up with the VW van?
Okay, I didn't say it wasn't stupid that it couldn't keep up with the van.
It was cool. I'll give you that. It looked a little bit too much like a car, I guess. I know that might sound dumb.
I know exactly what you mean, because I thought the same thing. I said it could have looked more Batmobile-ish instead of more car-ish. I know exactly what you're talking about.
But it looked like a really cool car, to be clear. Very cool car, but it looked like a car.
Yeah, it did. And but I am excited. I hope they use it more during this season. But it does need to be a little more Batmobile-ish. But at least we got it. So overall, I like the premiere overall, and I'm hoping the season gets a lot better. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah. So if you're like Drew and I, and you know little about Midnighter, there was a comic that came out, I think, after Rebirth, right, Drew? Correct me if I'm wrong on this. Midnighter and Apollo was a miniseries. It came out in 2016. It's right on the cusp. I feel like that was post-Rebirth.
I can't remember, but I do remember something about the Midnighter coming out.
Anyway, it's a 6-issue miniseries starring, as the title would suggest, Midnighter and Apollo. I clearly haven't read it myself, but if Future State... his appearance in the Superman title intrigued you, and you don't really know anything about him, check it out. I will say, I heard good things about the title. It's by Steve Orlando, who's generally done some pretty good stuff. I've heard it's good. I've not read it myself.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about the show called The Expanse. It's a sci-fi show that's about Earth and Mars and the asteroid belt. There's a colony on Mars. They're like a military colony. There's Earth, and they're like Mars is like its own government kind of thing, and they're kind of butting heads with Earth. And then you got the asteroid belt, where they're out there mining, and the belters out there they're not really their own government. They kind of rely on both Earth and Mars. It's really interesting politically. It's really interesting with what's going on in the show. I don't want to say too much without giving stuff away, but it was a little slow at first, but I got into it, and I was like, yeah, this is a pretty good sci-fi show. So that's my shout-out. Check it out. It's on Amazon Prime. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Sensational Wonder Woman, Batman Black and White, Batman White Knight Presents Harley Quinn, Strange Adventures, The Other History of the DC Universe, we got Future State Aquaman, Future State Batman Superman, Future State Dark Detective, Future State Legion of Superheroes, Future State Suicide Squad, Future State Superman vs. Imperius Lex, and of course, Episode 2 of Batwoman. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Wonder Woman! Wonder Woman! for you and the power you possess. In your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.